Welcome to My Art Broker Talks. I'm your host, Charlotte Stewart. And today is the first of a series of talks that we're running around art and technology. Our guests will be key players in this space that we believe are really disrupting the status quo of this rather traditional and sometimes painfully antiquated art market that we all call home. So our guest today is Covelio, a company driven by a desire to bridge the gap between art and logistics and create a system that is fit for the 21st century. We're very lucky to have their founder, Edouard, join us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I think it's really interesting that we start this series with the topic of logistics, because it's probably in many ways the last part of the collecting jigsaw that can't be entirely digitalized. You know, we've done it to pretty much the rest of the art market. Bar perhaps the NFT market, you still can't move an artwork from A to B without it being a manual and quite often laborious process. So, Edouard, perhaps you can start today by telling us what sets your platform apart from the traditional methods.
Sure. So I think to do that, for me, the easiest way to position ourselves in comparison to, let's say, the incumbents is to go back to the reason as to why we created Covelio, right? And I mean, my co-founder and I have a background in operation and technology, and I would say about 7-8 years ago, we started to work in the art and antique markets. And what we realized was that logistics in the art world was quite late in comparison to the way logistics was done, let's say in e-commerce or like in other kind of like normal freight, let's put it that way. And we identified probably three problems, right? Like the first one was that it was impossible for us to get instant shipping rates. So on the market, which is, as you mentioned, getting increasingly digitalized. So like a lot of collectors now are buying artworks online and so on and so on. The fact that you have to pay for your artwork in one transaction and for the shipping in another one, for the storage and with another one, just didn't really make any sense to us. And so we thought that not only should the prices be generated automatically, but they should also be integrated within one checkout. So that was kind of the first reason. The second reason was more linked to price, right? So historically in logistics, there are a lot of intermediaries. That's particularly true in the art market, where like historical players use a lot of agents and so on and so on. And so what we realize is obviously the more intermediaries you have, the more layers of cost you have to pay, and that at the end of the day are being paid by the collectors. And so we wanted to change that and offer something more competitive. And the last point was that as we were working more with like art organization and businesses within the art market, what we realized is whenever we had to ship something from let's say New York to London, we'd not be able to use the same company as from Paris to Tokyo, for example. And that's kind of when we had like, upon the realization of these three problems, we're like, well, the art market would benefit likely from like a one-stop shop from which we can get instant shipping price and are competitive and with a large geographical scope. And that's essentially how we differentiate today still from the incumbents in the market. So trying to make sure that, you know, we offer the best technology to calculate instant shipping rates. That was the beginning for us, but also through many other technological tools, right? Like we built the industry first end-to-end tracking, for example. We built the first dashboard platform where, like, you know, you can see all of the orders, all of the shipments you have with us, all of the quotes, all of the documents, like custom documentation and so on and so on. We also pride ourselves to deliver, what we consider is the best quality to price ratio. That's the way we differentiate ourselves. We're not necessarily the cheapest one, but we want to be very competitive. And so the idea for us is to be able to offer the most competitive rates and the best quality of service, leveraging on technology to be able to deliver that. Mm-hmm. So sorry, that was a long answer, but the idea of, that's essentially the way we differentiate.
So in theory, this sounds amazing. But I also know that being the logistics coordinator for any gallery or auction house is one of the toughest jobs there, because there is, you know, there's never one answer. There's never, all our listeners will have bought and sold and moved artwork around, and there is always something that's slightly different dependent on the artwork, the value of the artwork, the import tax, the geography. There is just so many different variables. So it all sounds great in theory. How do you leverage technology in order to make it seamless behind the scenes so that the client gets this seamless, efficient approach?
Yeah, I think to start, and you touched upon something that I'm quite passionate about, which is I think registrars and operation managers in the art market don't get enough credit. And I'll start with this because they do a really, really tough work, meaning that without them, there is essentially nothing happening. So just a little thought for them. Now, how we use technology to make sure that we can cater to all the exceptions, because the art market is made out of exceptions, right? And so when we started, we started to build like a fairly basic like macro on an Excel spreadsheet. And the idea was, you know, we started out of Paris and we're like, well, let's try to see if we can manage some of these exceptions for a subcategory of the art market to be able to generate prices instantly, right? So we looked at like artworks that were historically below £25,000. And we were like, okay, well, so most of the time they are not expensive, therefore not too fragile most of the time. Or let's say you can if there is an issue, you can solve it fairly quickly with insurance. And so we focused on just generating like relatively easy quotes, yet instantaneous for like the likes of the flea market in Paris, and so on. Now, what we realized over time is obviously the art market at large has many, many exceptions. And so we had to move from, let's say, an Excel spreadsheet approach to an actual algorithm. So now we have, in essence, two algorithms. We have one algorithm, which is for that historical offering, which is what we call our essential offering. So right now it's all the items that are below £100,000 and that are not fragile. And so that algorithm takes on essentially all of the parameters that are necessary to generate an instant price, right? So like the cost for the pickup, the cost for the crediting, or like a certain kind of packaging, custom brokerage, courier prices if necessary, air cargo, and so on, up to the point that we if we need to do an installation. And on the other side, we have another algorithm that is essentially the same thing, but for anything that is significantly more expensive, right? So what is above £100,000, which can be very, very fragile, and you can get an instant quote up to £1 million. Then above that, we'll still use the same algorithm, but it still needs to go through our team to make sure that all the parameters are right. Building this algorithm was obviously pretty difficult. What was really, really tough, honestly, was more on the finance side, right? So when you start to get to certain values, obviously you have a lot more parameters than you need to consider, right? Like there are, let's say, some artworks that require to be created at pickup. There are some crates that needs to be, like, you need like museum-like crates. You can need T-frame, A-frame, like, All these parameters are really tricky to estimate. And so we had to build within that algorithm ways for us to estimate crate sizes and crate types. We also now take into consideration materials. So we're going to change the typology of crate based on the materials and inside the crates, the packaging that we're using based on the materials that are being used to create an artwork. And at the other end of the spectrum is also, you know, some art companies or some luxury companies will actually use us to do multiple deliveries across the world with installation. And so like, how do you take into account the time that you need to do installation? So all of these different parameters are integrated within the algorithm. So in the end, like if I had to summarize that, is we had to take all of the knowledge that a registrar has and organize that in a way that it can be digested by a computer. So transparently, I think this has taken us 6 years to get to the stage where we are. I think we get to a stage where 90% of the quote requests we receive can be managed through that algorithm. In short, that has worked pretty well, but it took us a really long time to get it right.
I think it's a great analogy, the concept of having to basically pick the brains of somebody who's worked in perhaps an auction house where you've got a 6-foot antiquity to move to Tokyo, and you've also got maybe, you know, a miniature that's worth the millions that's moving. You know, it's that amount of variables, and actually very similar to our algorithm, which is really trying to pick the brains of a dealer that watches every single private sale, knows exactly what all his clients will pay for something. You know, you're essentially trying to And I suppose this is what technology is always trying to do, but you're essentially trying to take the human brain and all the variables it knows as an expert and automate it. And I love your honesty of how long it will take to get to that point, because I think, you know, anybody that is able to build a product like this that can take the strain off a human being that's maybe worked in this industry for 10 years, it takes much longer than you ever think it's going to, doesn't it? Because you've never considered all the variables. How sophisticated is it at the moment, and how much more do you have to build into it? When will it be finished? Will it ever be finished?
Well, I think honestly, it's never going to be finished. There are always things that we need to improve. Like, I think, you know, every quarter we have a new challenge that comes in, and there is like something that we want to fix. The way we think about it is, if we do our job right regarding the algorithm, we essentially remove the risk for human error. And so that allows not only our team, but that also allows registrars to make sure that artworks can arrive not only on time, but without any incident, and so on and so on. And so there will always be things that will need to be, that can be improved within that algorithm. Now, the algorithm is not the only thing that we're doing, right? Like, I think when we think about the shipping experience, getting a quote is obviously something that's very important, but there are many things around that are critical. And I mean, obviously, tracking was a really big element for us. Like, that took us a long time also to get it right, because you have like numerous parties. Let's say if you do like a London to New York shipment, you can have numerous parties, like the company that does the pickup, the one that does the crating, and so on and so on. And so, how do you organize the data? How do you centralize that data? How do you make it digestible by your system? How do you use that data to then provide like a delivery window which is as accurate as possible? And for that, we had like, it's essentially AI that at the end of the day you end up using. So there is obviously that element, and then you have many other elements which are more linked to the day-to-day of the registrars. So for example, I mean, obviously centralizing all of the information when it comes to invoices, custom brokerage, and so on and so on. But there are many kind of other things around that that we're looking into. Which is like, obviously, you know, like storage is also a very big problem. I mean, like, it's not a problem, right? But like, it's something that's being used and managed by registrar quite a lot, right? So it's like, we've tackled shipping. Storage is an adjacent vertical, obviously, for us that we're looking at quite in details. And it's like, okay, we've done that for shipping. We'll continue to improve it over time. We know we have a lot of things, but if you want to deliver really exponential value to registrars, you cannot just take shipping as like kind of a siloed product, like it's going to solve part of their job. But if we really want to help them, we have to think at like 360 degrees, what are the problems that they're facing? And obviously storage is another element, managing payments is another one, and so on and so on. So I think our job will never be done, and we have a roadmap, I think, for the best part of the next 10 years. That's the way I say it.
Nice. Brilliant. Just to go back to affordability and access. So, you know, there's different types of affordability, isn't there? One of the big headaches is buying an artwork and then realizing how much it's going to cost to ship it. You know, there's a huge chunk of the cost of an artwork comes out in the shipping. But there's also affordability in terms of just saving people time, right? Being able to make that process seamless, taking that time away from it. If I'm about to bid on an artwork in an evening sale, can I, as a private collector, go into Convelio and essentially get an instant quote for moving a 4 meter wide oil painting worth 2.5 million to my home in a remote part of the Andes? There we go.
It's a very good question. So that would typically fall within the 10% that we would custom quote. And the reason for it is that it's just the value, right? But I mean, what we can do as a collector, if you're looking to buy such an artwork, is you go on the website, or you write us an email, but you can go on the website, you put the different information, you click essentially send, that will go to our team, and within, on average, within 3 hours, they will be able to come back to you with a custom shipping quote. So before going into that auction, if you're looking to buy something above a million, then that's typically like what we would recommend, is that you do that a bit before, like maybe 3 hours before. So by the time you get to auction, you know exactly how much it's going to cost you, and that might impact also your bidding strategy. Now, if it's, let's say, below a million, you can go on the website and yeah, you can generate it as you would like, as you would like it to do. And that was always transparently, that was always our strategy, meaning we always wanted to be transparent and give the whole market a different benchmark when it comes to prices for logistics. And we know it's not serving us, like, to be transparent, because obviously we make our pricing available to our competitors, which obviously is being used quite a lot. But we also believe that's very important for the art market to be able to transact more often, meaning that if we're able to offer shipping rates that are more competitive, if we bring in that transparency, then in turn that kind of influence the other players to make sure that they're also competitive, and therefore that allows auction houses and galleries and so on to sell more often. And we believe that contributes to a more dynamic art market.
Yeah. I mean, also, again, there's such a parallel there with what we do with our pricing technology. 100%. Sometimes it's frustrating when you can see the people that use the pages the most are your competitors. But yes, it's all about creating that transparency, isn't it, in the art market. If you put it behind a paywall, you're not actually adding anything to the good of the market overall. As you said, you know, the art market is all about variables. I'm interested to understand the trust element in this jigsaw puzzle that you've created of, I assume, thousands of different partners that you use around the world. What's the process there? How quickly do you decide to use somebody particularly in areas that it must be relatively easy to do in, you know, New York City, but particularly in further flung areas? How do you go about deciding that somebody is a good partner to use?
Very good question. So let's say there are three processes in that case. There is one process on the trust, which is in the UK, we have our own assets, right? So we acquired a company back in March called Connoisseur. For whenever we do something in London, which is fine art, that directly goes to them. We trust the guys who've been doing that for 25 years, right? So from that perspective, there are no questions. Now, the way we do that process in the rest of the world depends on which offering is selected by the client, right? So again, we have that essential budget conscious offering, and we have the fine art offering. When it comes to the essential offering, the way we work is that we will identify potential parties, we will kind of train them over time, right? So that means the process is fairly similar for fine art. It's just there are more parameters. But we will do 10 shipments with them, and we start with a shipment that is inexpensive, not fragile. We call the gallery at the time of the pickup. We call the collector at the time of the delivery. We see how that works out. We do that for free artworks within the same price range. Then free, if that works, then it goes to the second step, which is the exact same process with either more fragile or higher value, and then the same process once again, step three with higher value, right? And so we essentially check it 9 to 10 times. By the time we actually consider that a supplier is good enough to be working with us, and in that case, they enter our supplier base. We don't have thousands of providers because we actually we'd rather have fewer providers to whom we give a lot of volume, because then they can work with us, they can adapt their pricing. They can work with our systems as well, which is really important, particularly for tracking elements. So that's the process that we have for essential. When it comes to fine art, that essentially is the same thing, except that we are a lot more stringent, right? So if there are things where we can say, okay, I know the guy was, I mean, the track was like 30 minutes late, right? Like, that's not something we're going to accept on the fine art side, typically for pickups, because obviously the demands of the top tier galleries are much higher than some of the other ones. And so that process is significantly more stringent for fine art. We also obviously have a lot less providers and suppliers for fine art. So we have even a much higher concentration for fine art, where we really want to have control over what's actually being, what's happening. And the beauty of that, the beauty of that model is that if it doesn't work with someone, like if a provider we consider is not good enough, we just essentially have the possibility to change provider. And that goes against maybe a bit of the thinking process of some of the early feedback that we got, where some of our clients were telling us, well, you know, but if you have your own guys, you have a lot more control and so on, which is true, which is one of the reasons why we did that acquisition in the UK. But that acquisition in the UK was also driven by the fact that there are a lot more competition in the UK. So having a value chain which is split in the first step is more difficult. And what we like about the ability to be able to change provider is to say, well, we can always work with the best guys. we can concentrate the volumes, we can make sure we get the best prices, and then we deliver that to collectors, right? So that's your approach in short.
Is there a sustainability angle to Convelio? Can you
talk about that? Yeah, 100%. So obviously sustainability in logistics is a very big topic, particularly in the outward, because whenever you have overseas shipment, the vast majority of shipments are done via air freight, which is obviously polluting a lot more, right? So we've done different, like we've put in place different initiatives. The first one was around reusable packaging. So primarily for intra-town shipping, whenever we can, and particularly for art fairs, there are solutions that we put in place for reusable packaging. The second point for us as well was to look at ways already as kind of a first step. I mean, we're not so old as a company, we're 6.5 years old. But something we wanted to put in place was to give people visibility when it comes to the carbon emission that are generated for a shipment. And so the first step we've done for that was to partner with a company that's called Squake, where after every shipment, our technology pings their technology, and that allows us to return the emission that were generated for a specific shipment and give the possibility to a client to compensate for that shipment. It's not perfect in the sense that obviously we should try to reduce the emission that are generated on a pre-shipment basis. What we are also acknowledge, however, is while we can move things on the packaging side, use reusable packaging, more sustainable packaging options, the reality is that air freight is what pollutes the most out of the whole chain. And that is kind of something that's out of our hands to a vast extent, right? And to go more in details about that, the only way for us to be really, to be offering more sustainable options on the air freight side is to work with some of our providers that offer green options. So like they would typically use latest generation aircraft. They will use more sustainable aviation fuel, which is something that we're offering as well on request. And also to work more on the sea freight side, to develop more sea freight offering. Now, to be very transparent, and as we talk about sustainability and technology, the sad reality is that while a lot of people talk about sustainability, essentially no one's ready to pay for it. And we've had that. So we've been offering, typically in the UK for the past 5.5 years, a green option, which has been booked a handful of times, though we've been offering it essentially for every quote for the vast majority of the past more than five years. Mm-hmm. And so I think there need to be also a wider conversation, in my opinion, with our clients, with the collectors also, as to who is supposed to take that charge of paying for more. Obviously, we can develop the technology, we can invest quite a lot in offering different services, which we've done, whether on the air freight side, on the sea freight side. Now, we probably need to split the cost at some point, right? Like, I think, obviously, as you may know, logistic companies don't have the highest of margin. Collectors don't want to pay necessarily for a service that's more expensive, and obviously, auction houses and galleries as well. And so I think there needs at some point to be a wider conversation, which to a certain extent the GCC is doing. But I think they need to be, I think, more at consortium level discussions about, okay, how do we as a market move in the direction where, you know, we accept that logistics may cost a little bit more if we decide to actually push for more sustainable options. Mm. You know, it's going to be a slightly more expensive because safe aviation fuel is expensive. Sustainable packaging option are more expensive than the more polluting ones, right? And that's something we all need to acknowledge.
Mm. And I suppose it's really the ones to start with. I assume you do a lot of large scale fare transport.
Yeah.
You know, which it's a very different scope of impact than moving one artwork to one place, you know, twice a year. Yeah,
100%. I mean, that's a very interesting use case, and that's one in which we invested quite a lot. Because typically, art fairs, like for art fairs, you can ship some things via sea freight, right? Like, so that's when it starts to become interesting to do sea freight. Mm-hmm. You can put them in like specific containers, which are sealed. They can be temperature controlled, and so insurance are usually quite happy. You can place them at a certain in a certain place of the boats, of the ships, which are more secure and so on, right? So that becomes really, really interesting. the problem we've been facing historically with our fans is the fact that obviously, you know, it takes
time scale.
It takes time, right? And so these are artworks that are not exposed in a gallery. And you know, until the very last minutes, a lot of the galleries don't know where they're going to expose on the other side of the Atlantic or on the other side of the Pacific.
Yeah.
And so what we try to do for every art fair is we reach out to literally everyone and we tell them, well, we're going to do a consolidated shipment. If you want to be part of that, let us know. Mm-hmm. And so they are always parts of the exhibitors that are going to use that that service. Now, the reality is also there are plenty of them that are not going to use it. And the vast, vast majority so far of our clients, because of internal dynamics and so on, it's difficult for them to use the C-Freight option.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, like, it's massive scale, an art fair, when you think that you have people coming from all over the world, all the artworks need to be shipped. Most of these artworks are being shipped via air freight. Like, this is obviously polluting quite a bit.
There's obviously, it doesn't really help you in the logistics world, but there's obviously a lot of people also trying to innovate how we make art fairs themselves. You know, these which they're the biggest problem, right? Because they're huge amounts of volume in very short time scales, you know, particularly if it's an auction sale touring that only had a consignment date of deadline of you know, 2 weeks prior to the tour. Things have to be moved fast, but it's definitely an area that I think that the art world will look back on. So it's a really difficult subject. Finally, is there anything that we should be looking out for at the moment in terms of partnerships or innovations that you're about to launch this year? What does 2024 hold for Convelio?
Well, quite a lot of things. I wish I could tell you a bit what the roadmap is going to look like. But so far, I don't think we're at a stage where we'll be communicating. I think maybe the one thing we can say is that we'll be starting to launch. I mean, we'll be launching a storage offering in the next 6 months, starting with the UK. With obviously what has been defining us since we started Redbox. So we're not going just to launch storage. We're going to launch storage with a tweak, and make sure that we can deliver maximum value to our clients. I think this is a very big initiative we can start to communicate about. And obviously, happy to talk to any of your listeners that would be interested to hear about that offering. And then beside that, we have a lot of very cool initiatives that if you agree, we can talk about again in maybe 6 to 8 months time. But I would say that storage is a big one that we can talk about. And it's obviously going to be quite a change for us, moving to a new vertical, which is not something that we've done up to now because we've always only been focusing on shipping.
Brilliant. It's quite exciting as well to be able to take what I imagine has been a relatively steep learning curve, because everything always is when you're developing something, into a new realm and put into practice all those things that you now know. Did you, I meant to ask you this at the beginning, but I think it's something I'd love to know. You worked for about 8 years in art and antiques, and that's where you saw this becoming an issue. Did you realize what you were taking on?
No, I think you know that we're very naive. You know, we're like, yeah, that's okay. It's going to be super, super easy, and we know exactly how to do it. And I remember when we started, and one of the first meeting we had was with the Perrotin Gallery in Paris, and the head registrar, which is still the head registrar now, a woman called Pamela, told us that you will see, it's going to be amazing, but you have no idea where you ended up. And it's going to be so difficult, and there are a lot of things that you haven't foreseen. And she was right on everything. Like it was quite difficult. We obviously in the beginning, you know, we faced a lot of skepticism. Like we are like these two guys coming from technology companies, knew nothing about how artwork was, like the art market was working, and so on. And yeah, obviously people were looking at us. I don't know if you can say that with disdain, like kind of looking at what are these two guys kind of like coming to the market, you know, And we had to create legitimacy, to build our own legitimacy, right? So we started with like, you know, like the antiques. And then at some point, we started to work with First Dibs and then Christie's and then like Sotheby's and like tier one galleries and so on. But we had to build that, and we had to build that legitimacy over time. And we had no idea how complicated it was going to be. And I think the more it goes, the more fun we have, but also the more complex it becomes, right? Like what I think we underestimated was how complex technology can be as you scale. Because obviously the systems are changing. We manage significantly more volumes. And so how do you kind of maintain all of that? And that was quite a challenge. And also, we also changed the art logistic market more than what we thought, right? So now we start to see also, obviously, which is very good, like competition is kind of waking up, has been waking up for the past, I would say, 2 years or so. And now they want to catch up, right? And obviously for us, that's great because we see like, that's kind of like the move they wanted to create, which is at the end of the day, we build transparency, kind of created a trend that allows everyone to kind of, offer a service which is better for the art market. They're going to need to be more transaction about that. But I think that also forces us to continue to innovate, right? And honestly, that's exciting, challenging, but it was a lot more difficult than when we could have ever imagined when we started with start of that idea 7 years ago.
Because somebody from the art market wouldn't have tried to do it. They wouldn't think it was possible. And I think that, that's also the challenge, is becoming not part of the problem. That is, this is how we do things. The art market is full of that. People coming in, doing something disruptive, and then the competitors turning around going, oh, but they're doing it. And, there's a lot of people at the top of businesses, particularly, who are very, very resistant to change. Particularly in this industry, I think more than anything else.
We get it a lot, honestly, from competition, we know what was said about us when we started, we know what is being said about us now. I think the reality is that, we're keeping our head down, we have a team that works super, super hard. We just want to deliver value. I think we managed to create a good product for budget conscious shipping in the beginning. We managed to go up market, and obviously, every step of the way, we bother people. But I think at the other end of the spectrum, we also know that we deliver value for our clients. And at the end of the day, that's the only thing that matters.
Mm-hmm. Edward, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you very much for having me.